Hello. Before we jump into the show, we need to shout out our awesome new sponsor, Marquee TV.
Man, I was so excited when we got the news about the sponsor. You all might remember from a few weeks ago that I talked about my new Shakespeare project where I'm learning everything I can about Macbeth.
It felt like we said the name Shakespeare out loud and the Marquee people appeared and said, "We gotcha."
It really did.
Yeah.
In case you're not familiar, Marquee TV is a streaming service. They have theater, ballet, opera, documentaries. There's a bunch of behind-the-scenes content of productions. Basically, it's a fun way to nerd out about the arts.
Yeah, it's a streaming service that will take you to the best theaters in the world from the comfort of your own sofa.
I've already added so many things to our watch list. Did you know there's a ballet based on the works of Beatrix Potter?
I did. They've got a little preview video of somebody dancing around in a rabbit costume.
Peter Rabbit doing ballet. I also added a few hip-hop dance shows just to balance out the dancing bunnies.
Yeah, hip-hopera. That's what they call it.
They do. It's so fun.
Yeah.
Mozart's Requiem from the London Philharmonic Orchestra and a bunch of Shakespeare plays, including Richard II, starring my pretend best friend, David Tennant.
And Judi Dench talking about her long relationship with Shakespeare in a master class.
Yeah, I love Judi Dench.
Sure.
But David Tennant.
Yeah, that's quite a battle there.
Okay, there's a special deal for our listeners. Marquee TV is offering 3 months of their service for 99 cents. You get 3 months of all of this good stuff for 99 cents with the code SSOP.
That cost seems absurdly low to me. Like, first, I expected it to be much higher given the quality of the content, but also 99 cents. You can't park next to a theater for 99 cents.
Accurate. Also, if you watch Marquee TV, you get to see these shows maybe wearing your pajamas and hanging out with your cat or your dog.
Yeah. It's a good way to sort of indulge your own curiosity. You can see all the performances of Hamlet, or maybe the first 15 minutes of all of the performances of Hamlet, and you don't have to rope your friends and family into all of that.
Or you could watch Richard II over and over and over and over.
What's the best angle for David Tennant in Richard II?
Trick question. All of them. Anyway, you definitely need to explore the website because there is a ton of really fun, fascinating, engaging stuff on there. I went in specifically looking for Shakespeare, and I found a ton of other things I wanted to watch.
Yeah. You can keep up with what they're doing on social media at Marquee Arts TV. You can visit their website at marquee.tv. That's marquee.tv to get 3 months of their service for just 99 cents with the promo code SSOP. Bring the arts home with Marquee TV. And now the show.
Coming up, a creative new take on a manor house murder.
A favorite author extends one of his novels from New York to Hollywood.
Plus our distraction of the week. I'm Mel.
I'm Dave. This is the Library of Lost Time.
I'm deep into reading for the upcoming season of our Strong Sense of Place podcast.
Yeah.
Season 6 coming soon, we promise.
Swear. This time for sure.
But if I could read anything right now, I would pick the new mystery novel, How to Solve Your Own Murder, by Kristen Perrin. I've seen this title thrown around in the same sentence as Knives Out, The Thursday Murder Club, Agatha Christie, and Midsummer Murders.
Oh, you like all of those things.
I do. I'm imagining it's a little bit cozy with some darker facets.
Yeah.
And the premise is great. Here's the setup. In 1965... teenager Frances Adams goes to an English country fair with her two best friends. And on a lark, they pop in to see the fortune teller, Madame Peeny Lane.
Always promising when there's a fortune teller in the first act.
100%. Madame has some chilling words for Frances. Your future contains dry bones. Your slow demise begins right when you hold the queen in the palm of your hand. Beware the bird, for it will betray you. And from that, there is no coming back. But daughters are the key to justice. Find the right one and keep her close. All signs point toward your murder.
That's fantastic.
So Frances spends her life trying to solve the crime that hasn't happened yet, and everyone thinks she's being silly.
Sure.
60 years later, she is still alive, and now she's a wealthy woman living on an estate in a quiet village. She invites her niece, Annie, who's an aspiring mystery novelist, to come for a visit at the Castle Knoll estate. But when Annie arrives, she finds that the fortune has come true. Her aunt has been murdered. Take that, doubters. The will Frances left behind stipulates that the first person to solve her murder within the week will inherit her entire estate. So wow. Annie springs into action to uncover the killer.
That's a great setup.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Publishers Weekly said the pace is quick, the red herrings are plentiful, and Annie's growth from timid wannabe writer to confident sleuth is beautifully rendered. This is the first treat I'm going to give myself when I'm finished with my required reading for season 6. It's How to Solve Your Own Murder by Kristen Perrin.
Amor Towles is having a moment. He's the author of Rules of Civility and The Lincoln Highway. He also wrote one of my favorite modern novels, A Gentleman in Moscow.
Every time I hear that title, I just feel like I'm getting a hug.
Yeah. That book is the story of a Russian aristocrat who is arrested and condemned to live in a hotel on Red Square during a good chunk of the 20th century. You can hear me talk about my love for that book in our episode about Russia.
I'll put a link in the show notes.
The first bit of news about Amor Towles is that A Gentleman in Moscow has been adapted into a series. Showtime subscribers can now enjoy Ewan McGregor in the lead of Count Alexandra Ilya Rostov. The first of the 8 episodes premiered the last week of March. We watched it last night. It was fantastic.
It was really good.
Yeah.
I like the way it felt very true to the book, but is also good TV. It's not slavishly following the opening of the book.
Yeah. The episodes are now coming out once a week. The reviews have been excellent. Rotten Tomatoes has it at 94.
Wow.
Yeah. And reviewers are talking a lot about how charming Ewan McGregor is. A shock to us all, I'm sure.
I know. He's so hard to look at.
And just dour, you know, just...
If only he had a little flair and style.
Yes. The reviewers are also saying it's a solid adaptation of the book. The second bit of news about Amor Towles is the release of his new book, Table for Two. It's a collection of 6 short stories and a novella.
That's an interesting format. It feels very like old-timey.
It does. Yeah. Here are my collected writings.
Yeah.
The 6 short stories are all set in New York. The novella, though, is set in Los Angeles, and it's an extension of Rules of Civility.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. In that book, we see the character Evelyn Ross get on a train in New York City in 1938. She intends to return home to the Midwest. But in the novella, she has ghosted her parents in Chicago and ridden that train all the way to Los Angeles.
Atta girl.
The story is set in Hollywood's golden age. It's told from 7 points of view.
Oh, I'm even more interested now than I was before. Mm-hmm.
And Olivia de Havilland is a central character in that story.
Sweet.
Yeah. Researching that made me want to read all of Amor Towles, some of it again. His most recent release, Table for Two, is out this week. And now our distraction of the week.
On my walks this week, I listened to a podcast that I can't wait to tell everyone about. Like, literally, I was listening to it and thinking, oh, I have to go home and write about this immediately.
What is it?
It's called Behind the Glass, a Parsonage podcast. And before I get into it, I have to say thank you to our listener, Tina P., for recommending this show to me. The Bronte Parsonage is a museum maintained by the Bronte Society to honor Charlotte, Emily, and Anne.
Yeah.
It's basically the house where they grew up on the edge of the moors in a village called Haworth in England, and it's filled with all of their personal stuff.
We have been there, and if it's the kind of thing you think you might like, you're probably going to like
it. Yeah, it's really well done and really immerses you in that time period and their lives, and you get to see, well, things like... Charlotte's tiny, tiny dresses.
Yeah.
She was 4'9" tall. That's 145 centimeters for our Euro friends. Her dresses are like children's clothes.
Yeah. Also the tiny, tiny books.
Tiny, tiny books that they wrote that are about the size of a business card. They have the girls' portable writing desks where they kept ink and paper, but also little trinkets that they picked up along the way.
One of my favorite parts of the parsonage is it is right next to the graveyard that they were buried in.
It is.
Which presents a certain aura.
It does. And when there are trees there now, but when they were growing up, there were no trees in the cemetery. And when you're in some of their childhood bedrooms and you look out the window, you are looking directly at the graves and the gravestones.
Yeah.
Yowza.
Yeah. Which inadvertently was also poisoning the entire town.
Yes.
Like I said, certain vibe.
Certain vibe. The thing that had the most impact on me when we were there was the table. The three sisters wrote at an oval table in their dining room.
Yeah.
Jane Eyre, Wuthering Heights, and Agnes Grey were all written there. And as the story goes, in the evening, they would walk in circles around the table until 11 o'clock at night, talking through ideas.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty awesome feeling to stand there and look at it and imagine them creating these works that we're still reading 200 years later. And they weren't famous Bronte sisters. They were just three women trying to figure out how to feed themselves, basically.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was really moving for me to see that.
Yeah, they were their own tight little writing group. Mm-hmm. And they did amazing things in that dining room.
The Parsonage recently started a podcast to share stories about objects in the museum. And TBH, I wasn't sure what to expect because museum podcasts can be really hit and miss.
Yeah.
The hosts are experts in their fields. They are not necessarily pros at the art of audio journalism.
Or storytelling.
Yes. For me, this show hits just the right balance of friendly banter and rock solid information. The hosts, Sassy and Sam, are very charming. They also put together a really smart format. Each episode features a guest who chooses an object from the museum. They talk about its history and its meaning, and then they share something creative that they have made in response to it.
Oh, that's cool.
So you get this double whammy of creative inspiration. Before the guest chimes in, the hosts do a fantastic job of creating a strong sense of Haworth. They talk about the weather that they saw on their way in to the parsonage that day, which can be very changeable out on the moors. They talk about the unique smells. They're really good at describing what they see around the parsonage. So if you've never visited, you can see and hear and even smell in your imagination what they're describing. In one of the episodes, they talked about how Haworth was smelling very sheepy that morning because the fields all around it are populated by very cute sheep.
Yeah.
They also each answer the question, which Bronte are you feeling like today? Which on its surface is really fun and whimsical. But it's also really smart because it gives them a way to talk about the sisters' personalities without doing historical exposition. And it feels really personal. I feel like I know a little bit about Sassy and Sam from listening to them answer that question. So yesterday, on my walk through the park here in Prague in the sunshine, I listened to the episode with the guest, Rowan Coleman. She's a novelist, and she's the author of The Bronte Mysteries, which she wrote under the very Bronte-esque pseudonym Bella Ellis.
You might need to be a fan to figure that.
Right. When the Brontes published their novels the first time, they used the pseudonyms Acton, Kerr, and Ellis Bell, and Charlotte Emily Bronte.
And for a while, publishers thought they were men.
They did. They chose names that they thought would be ambiguous, and then, of course, everyone assumed they were men.
Yeah.
And then they eventually came clean.
Yep.
So Rowan got clever and called herself Bella Ellis, which I just think is adorable. In her mystery series, she's created sort of an alternate history about the three sisters and transformed them into amateur detectives. So the conceit is that before they wrote their masterpieces, they solved crimes in Haworth and Yorkshire. She's a lifelong fan of the Brontes. She knows a lot about their real history, and she weaves all of that, their personalities and the true facts of their lives, into these fictional adventures.
It is not hard to imagine the Bronte sisters putting up a murder board.
Charlotte bossing everyone around.
Yeah. They sort of draw out little pictures of everybody who are suspects.
Yeah.
Attach them with nice little pieces of yarn and such.
So, Rowan Coleman, aka Bella Ellis, lives in Scarborough. That's a seaside town on the North Sea coast in North Yorkshire, and it has an important Bronte connection. It was one of Anne's favorite places. she visited multiple times throughout her life. And sadly, in May 1849, she was very ill with tuberculosis. And everybody pretty much knew she was dying. So she wanted to visit Scarborough one last time. Charlotte and her best friend, Ellen Nussey, booked rooms for the three of them at an inn called The Cliff so that Anne could enjoy the sea air one more time. They were there for a few days. They went for a donkey cart ride across the wet sand. They went for walks. They had a beautiful sunset, which is described in one of Ellen's letters. And then Anne died and was buried in the cemetery there beside St. Mary's Church. In this episode, Rowan talks about a set of rocks that Anne had collected during her visits to Scarborough. And she goes into what they meant to Anne and her interest in geology and the impact that that collection of stones had on Rowan as a creative person. And then she shared the piece of writing that she wrote that was inspired by Anne. And I'm not going to ruin it by telling you what she did, but I will say this. I got a massive lump in my throat and started full-on crying walking down the hill from the park. But it was, I sent her a message on Twitter and said that I'd been crying listening to it, and she apologized. And I was like, are you kidding? It was fantastic. It was so cathartic. It felt so good to be moved that way. It was really beautiful and creative and personal, just really good few minutes of audio. Other episodes have featured the producer of the 2022 film Emily, about Emily Bronte.
Yep.
And there was a really good chat with a young woman who works at the parsonage. The object she chose is the Babbage Report.
What's the Babbage Report?
Well, it's not one of the more fun things in the collection, but it is really important.
Okay.
In 1850, there was a health inspection of Haworth. It is pretty grim because, as we mentioned earlier, there's this cemetery with no trees. What we didn't say is that the cemetery sits on the top of a hill, and that's where the water supply was coming from, running in from the moors. So the water filtered down through the cemetery and into the town.
Yep. So it drained through to the dead people.
Yes, it did.
And then people drank that water.
Yes.
And as a result, that small town had a really outrageous death rate.
It did. And people lived 4 and 5 families to one house because it was a very busy mill town. There wasn't a lot of housing and there wasn't a lot of money.
Yeah.
So the report is not a fun read, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But what Lizzie, the guest, did was use that report as a way to talk about what daily life was like in Haworth and what Patrick, the father of the Brontes, did to try to turn things around. He was a very successful activist and actually made changes that improved the quality of life there. Her creative response to the Babbage Report was just fantastic. She wrote a diary entry from the point of view of someone living in Haworth during the Victorian era.
Oh, that's cool.
Because diary keeping would have been something that regular people did. We just don't have a lot of their diaries because they weren't famous and no one saved them.
Right.
And her piece of writing was also really, really good. If you love the Brontes, you are going to love this podcast. If you're Bronte neutral or you're not a fan of their writing, this podcast is still for you because it's using them as a springboard to talk about storytelling, history, art, and the thing that I found most effective, vulnerability. The guests really open up their hearts and invite you to share in what moves them. One of the final questions that the hosts ask each guest is, if there was a museum of your life, what object would represent you? And again, on the surface, it seems really fun and playful, but it's made people say really interesting, honest, vulnerable, sweet, poignant things. I just find the whole show very affecting, really fascinating, filled with interesting information, and some feelings, which give me all of that. That's Behind the Glass, a Parsonage podcast. Visit strongsenseofplace.com/library for more on the books we talked about today and links to more about the Behind the Glass podcast.
Thanks for joining us in the Library of Lost Time. Remember to visit your local library and your independent bookstore to lose some time yourself.
Stay curious. We'll talk to you soon.